Let's talk to Bruce Williamson, who's from the campaign group Rail Futures and joins us now. Thanks for joining us at Talk Radio, Bruce.
Good afternoon, Julia.
Good afternoon.
I hope to handle it for more than 3 minutes.
Well, yeah, come on, let's take you on and see if this goes. What is your mandate for? No, anyway, Bruce, you know, 1.9% for those on regulated fares, 2.3% for those unregulated. It doesn't sound like a big percentage increase, but because for an awful lot of people who are using the railways regularly, their transport costs are often their second biggest expenditure after their mortgage or their rent. This can be a really big financial hit for families, can't it?
Oh, undoubtedly, yeah. I mean, you know, if you buy a season ticket, you're talking thousands of pounds, aren't you? And yet you're right in that it seems like only a small amount, doesn't it? 1.9%, 2.3%. But we've had this year on year on year. And so the real cost of travelling by train has gone up and up and up, and that's hitting people in the wallets. And contrast that, Julia, with what happens for motorists. They've had their fuel duty frozen for, you know, years on the trot now. So there's a very clear bias on the part of the government in favour of the motorists and against the poor old rail passenger.
Well, when this is it, though. We do hear about these rail increases every single year, but I suppose motorists face an increase in their costs as well every year, even when we don't have the fuel duty escalator put in, still facing a bigger prices at the pumps and the costs of insurance and the like. Should we be expecting rail commuters to be never to be hit?
Well, no, not at all. I mean, it would be fair, wouldn't it, if the rail fares went up by just inflation. But the devil is in the detail here, of course. There are two measures of inflation. There's RPI, Retail Price Index, and CPI. Now, most people agree that CPI is a sort of fairer, more accurate figure. And that's the one that government uses for, well, it says it's its preferred measure. And that's what, you know, things like pensions and benefits go up according to CPI. Because RPI, which is the higher figure, is used for rail fare increases. So it's not just inflation, it's above inflation, and it's been consistently above inflation year on year, and that's why it's unfair.
And I have to say, if I'm one of the main aims in my life was not to be a commuter. I have to be honest with you. I find I've got a bit, no, seriously, I do a half an hour door to door on the tube. I'm standing there with my head, luckily I'm tall, so I'm not normally in someone's armpit, they're usually in my armpit, but it's a pretty unpleasant, horrible, sweaty experience, and it's not something I look forward to, but it's short and it's reliable. So I know that. But the people who are commuting every single day, often like 45 minutes, an hour, hour and a half each way, and they're often having to stand on trains and they're paying a small fortune for doing it. They're not even seeing the services that they're using getting in better value or more reliable. And we've seen what's happened to the poor godforsaken long-suffering commuters on Southern Rail.
Yeah.
It's part of the resentment, not that, okay, it's going up, it's getting more expensive, but the fact that the service is getting worse.
Yeah, absolutely right. And it is interesting, isn't it, that, you know, despite the increased overcrowding and the increased sort of cost of rail travel, rail passenger numbers still continue to go up and up and up. So despite the government's best efforts to price people off the trains, it's not working. So, you know, I suppose what that shows is that many, many rail passengers feel they have no choice. And with rail passenger numbers doubling in the last decade or so, they certainly haven't seen a doubling in the number of seats available, or the number of stations opened, or the number of lines, or whatever. So we're cramming ever more people into the same amount of trains, and there's a real problem with investment just nowhere near keeping up with the amount of people who want to travel by train or have no choice but to travel by train.
Well, this is it, isn't it? Because some people say, well, why don't you travel another way? A lot of people don't own cars. A lot of people might be able to drive their car to their commute. And we often think about people commuting into London, but actually people commute into many, many different cities and towns across the country. But actually there's nowhere for them to park when they do get there, or they'll face the congestion charge and the costs are far greater. And the reality is the people who do drive their cars, who might moan saying, oh well, why are you all subsidising the railways, they wouldn't be able to get to work in their cars if all the people on the trains got into theirs. It works both ways, doesn't it?
You're doing my job for me, Julia. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, rail is absolutely essential to the functioning of big cities. And if the rail network was shut down, we'd be absolutely stuffed. And you're quite right, you know, that some people, driving just isn't an option, so they have to use the trains. And, you know, it makes it all the more important, I think, that the government should be sort of trying to make rail travel attractive and help to sort of stimulate the economy and help keeping us moving around and reducing congestion and reducing pollution and so on. The knock-on benefits are great. But, of course, whilst people are being priced off the railway, that isn't happening.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the thing, isn't it? Now, we know that in lots of Western European countries, they actually subsidise their railways, their nationalised railways, a lot of them, not privatised in the way that ours are. And people have a much more reliable service, and they pay a lot less per mile travel, don't they?
Yes, they do. There's no doubt that if you want to sort of just turn up at the station and buy a ticket, British rail travel is the most expensive in Europe. Now, the train operating companies will say, well, look, if you book in advance, you can get some of the cheapest tickets in Europe, which is also true. But, of course, that doesn't suit many people. You know, I don't know in advance that I'm going to want to travel to London in 3 weeks' time at 11 a.m. You know, I want to turn up when it suits me, not have... what's going on, of course, is the rail companies are using pricing to manage demand. In other words, you know, the passengers are being priced off the railway to suit the convenience of the train operating companies. Well, of course, it should be the other way around. You know, the train operating companies should be running the railway to suit the interests of the passengers. And sadly, that isn't the case at the moment. And we're all paying in the wallet.
Well, this is it. Now, we know that certainly particularly for Southern Rail, more than 84,000 passengers are to receive compensation for the disruption they've experienced during 2016, the equivalent to almost a month's free travel. But again, I think most people, given the choice, they would just rather be able to get to and from work on time. You know, well, call us old-fashioned with our unreasonable demands in the 21st century in a first world country.
Well, no, absolutely. We've spoken about Southern before, haven't we? And actually...
We will do again, Bruce.
I mean, there has been a slight change of the rules on compensation, which I think favour the passengers slightly. And it's absolutely right that where you get a poor service, you're entitled to compensation. But, of course, it shouldn't come to that in the first place, should it, really? You know, we all want a sort of not only an affordable railway, but a reliable railway and a railway that has enough seats that we can actually sit down and not stand in, as you say, in someone's armpit for several hours, you know.
Yeah, but this is it. There should always be benefits to being tall, as I say. In terms of where we go from here, though, you can speak to me and say this is unfair. All the passenger groups can say this, and everyone can wring their hands and go, oh, isn't this awful, isn't it awful?
Yeah.
Every single year, they're going to go up every January, and we're never going to stop that, are we?
Well, I mean, I think for a campaign group such as us, and for the poor old ordinary passenger, I think it's right that we kick up a stink every year. And you know, I think we have had some success because in the past, the proposal was to put rail fares up by RPI plus 3. And that was sort of dropped a couple of times. So at least we're down to RPI. And you know, we want to get it down to CPI, which would be fairer. But yeah, let's make a noise every year. Let's make the politicians listen. Let's make the politicians realise that rail passengers have a vote. It's not just motorists who have the vote. And hopefully, in the longer term, you know, we will have a more affordable railway and a railway which has had the sort of long-term investment that it needs. So there's enough trains for all the passengers who want to travel.
You said that, but even I could detect that you didn't really believe it was ever going to happen.
Well, what was going to happen?
That we are going to have a railway that actually, you know, delivers what we want.
No,
because
I
mean, even with HS2, with the best will in the world, it's not going to change travel for most people in the country.
No, it won't. And it is certainly a super tanker to turn around. It's a juggernaut. But we, in the last few years, we have seen some very welcome investment. You know, there's things like Crossrail and HS2 and the electrification of the Great Western, although we have concerns about whether that's actually ever going to be finished, and new trains and so on. So this investment is happening, but it's very frustrating for the passenger if that isn't happening on your particular line. You know, we need this investment across the network, and we need consistent and sustained investment. And eventually, you know, if that investment is consistent and sustained over, I hate to say it, but decades, then we will have the railway we deserve. But it's a long way off, sadly, and we have to keep pushing.
Indeed. Well, lovely to talk to you, Bruce Williamson, from the campaign group Rail Futures.